May 22nd, 2018. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson. This week's episode, episode 13, by the way, for all of you superstitious people out there. Today's episode, we're going to talk to Vegas Bun Boy, as he's known on Twitter. Chris Taylor is his born name. I'm going to talk to you about my recent blackjack tournament that I'm kind of embarrassed to tell you about, but we'll get there. The first thing I want to do, though, is I want to mention a couple movies that I've seen that I think you probably know about. Maybe you don't, because when I stumbled across them, I was unaware of them. But they are gambling-related, right? So gambling-related. They're not great, right? So they're not blockbuster hits. You're not going to be recommending this to all of your friends. But for those of us of the gambling nature that appreciate good content, or entertaining content, I should say, around gambling, a couple that you should check out. One of these I know is on Netflix. I'm not sure how to get the other one. The first one is called Lay the Favorite. I stumbled across this on Netflix because occasionally I go on Netflix and I search Vegas or casino to see what's available. And I saw Lay the Favorite. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. It was right before a flight, so I downloaded it. And I watched it on a flight. What's crazy about this, and I had never heard of this until I had seen it pop up in that search, and apparently this came out in 2012. I don't watch a lot of movies, though. That may have something to do with it. But Bruce Willis is in this. Rebecca Hall. Joshua Jackson is in this. Vince Vaughn had a cameo. For that amount of stardom in it, I thought that I would have heard of it. Didn't. But the summary is, ex-private dancer Beth aspires to be a Las Vegas cocktail waitress. When she falls in love with Dink, a sports gambler, sparks fly as she proves to be something of a gambling prodigy, much to the ire of Dink's wife, Tula, who actually happens to be Catherine Zeta-Jones. So those are the names that are in this. It's not a great movie, writing-wise, but it is entertaining, and it's worth doing exactly what I did in downloading it on Netflix and watching it on a flight where you may not have anything else to do. So not recommending it for people that are looking for a Rounders or a casino or a Vegas vacation, but if you want a little bit of a gambling content and you're willing to laugh at some not great movie making, Lay the Favorites is a decent way to spend an hour and a half of your time. The other one is The House, which came out last year. I think more people are probably familiar with this one, but The House has a handful of bigger names again. Will Ferrell, Amy Poehler, is that how you spell it? How do you say her name? Nick Kroll is in this. Cedric Yarbrough from, what was he? He's in Reno 911. This movie is, I think, a little bit better put together. I think that it is more entertaining, not only from a movie standpoint, but from a gambling standpoint. And whether or not you appreciate the writing or the story or the acting or the performances, I think one thing that you can definitely appreciate in this movie, the approaches to gambling. And the premise, right, is that this town takes away their daughter's college scholarship. And so they start an illegal casino at a friend's house to make back the money. And it's funny watching them go through this progression of realizing how they can, like, make money through gambling. And without a spoiler, and I don't know if I could spoil this, right? Like, two patrons of their illegal casino are about to fight, and they quickly stop it so they can book it, right? Like, the only reason they stop their friends from beating each other up is because they realize that they should be taking bets on it first. It's little things like that that I found it really funny. Again, I found this on in-flight television, and I'm always willing to give something a chance when I'm in the middle of a flight, right? So the bar is pretty low in those circumstances. Not say I'd go to a Red Box and make it a Friday evening, but if you find it in a time where you're just trying to kill time and want a little bit of gambling entertainment, The House can do that for you. Before you start blowing up my Twitter with real good movies that are in gambling, I know those, and I'm pretty sure most people do too. Wanted to bring these up because they were new when I discovered them, and I found them, or they were new to me when I discovered them, and I I found them entertaining enough that I wanted to pass along that are looking for some entertainment in that fashion. Okay, blackjack tournament. $75,000 blackjack tournament put on by MGM National Harbor. I was playing really well. I was super stoked. I went in there with a plan. Sat down. Usually in these bigger tournaments, two players from the first couple rounds will advance. And then in the semifinals, it's the top player of the table. And then, of course, you have your final table. They shortened the field on this one. And so it was round one, semifinals, final, then final table. Only one player from the first round was going to advance. And that's the first time that it happened in a tournament that I've been playing in. So I sit down, playing really well, getting money on the table when I can. I'm surrendering when I'm in a bad spot. Luck kind of went my way where I got a blackjack on a hand that the dealer drew 21. The dealer drew 21 from a six, right? So people had money. People were doubling and getting money on the table. I had a blackjack, so I wasn't affected. The one time that I split and then doubled down, the dealer drew to, I think, drew a 20. But the split that I had that had the double down, also 20, so that push, so I had a minimal loss when everybody else had a full loss. Doing really well. Going into the last three hands, people were dropping like flies. Final hand, hand 12, right? So it's only 12 hands, which is shorter, pretty short for a blackjack tournament. Each round was only 12 hands. Not a lot of time to make moves, and I played more aggressively this time than I usually do, and it was working. I really messed up this last hand. And I said, I'm almost embarrassed to talk about it because when I finish talking about it, it'll be like, oh man, that you clearly had the opportunity to win this and messed it up. So I had about 10,000 in chips and I was heads up against a guy who maybe had 10,600, let's say 10,800. Something like that. Somewhere between 10 and 11,000, right? It didn't have much more than me, but enough where he clearly was ahead of me. He was dealer, so he's first to bet. He bets roughly my chip stack. And I say roughly because I made the mistake of not actually counting. I was so in this moment of this final showdown that I didn't allow myself to actually process what was going on. And actually take a good approach to what I was about to do. He puts in roughly 10,000, and without really thinking, I pushed in my entire chip stack because I was thinking I can only win this if I win this, right? And of course, what I mean is I can only advance if I win the most, if I win a big thing, it's chips. Mistake number one was I should have counted how many chips he had left, and I should have left myself one small denomination more. So that was mistake number one. Mistake number two, everybody gets dealt. He is a 15. I have a 17. Dealer showing a 10. He's first to act. He stays. Does not take a card. I should have surrendered. So this is opportunity number two to come away with chips, and in the event that he loses, I would advance. But I stayed, and dealer flipped over a 10, had 20. We both lost. He had some chips left over. Hindsight, it was so cool. Like, as soon as the hand was over, I was like, holy smokes, I really messed that up. And not just say there was a better way to play that, but it was an unfortunate misplay in the beginning when I didn't leave any chips left over in case we both lost a hand. It was an even bigger mistake that when he stayed on his 15, knowing that the dealer had a huge advantage over him with that 10, I should have surrendered, which would have cut my bet in half. I would have came back with 5,000 around-ish, and I would have had way more chips than he did. And so the dealer would have had to have busted, essentially. So two big mistakes, and I was frustrated the whole day. And it was that type of frustration where, like, anything else that frustrated me just, like, sat right on top of that frustration. Yesterday was a rough day. You live and you learn. The silver lining is I played really well in the first 11 hands of that round. Really great decisions. I was surrendering an opportunity, and I surrendered a couple times in positions where there was a lot of money on a table, and the dealer was in a good position to beat the table. I would surrender and take a minimal loss. Players were making kind of some silly mistakes. I was really, and now I think that's what makes the frustrating part of this more frustrating is I thought I was playing really well, and then I mucked it. I mean, it was clear, and I don't want to toot my own horn after I just admitted a big mistake that I made, but it was clear that I was one of two players at the table that really knew what they were doing, or at least knew what they were trying to do. And so there we are. What came out of lost in the first round, the first time that I've ever not advanced to the second round in a blackjack tournament. Frustrating, but well, you live and you learn. Next time we'll do better. I did come away with it, as frustrated as I was, I came away feeling like I was a better player. Like I'd learn. I feel like if it was a role playing game, I would have earned enough experience points to like level up. Like I came out of that feeling like a better player. And almost confident. Like I wanted another blackjack tournament because I felt like I would definitely outplay some people if I got another opportunity. So I'm getting better every time. The 12 hand rounds are short, and I'm realizing that the less people that are at the table, sort of the more aggressive you have to be, because if you're too conservative too early and aggressive players prevail and they get paid, it's a long way between your conservative position and their bigger chip stack because they were a little bit more aggressive. And so my approach was betting up roughly 20-30% of closer to 30. I was betting about 30% of what I had in the first few hands. Always making it one denomination more than the other biggest bet that had been bet before me. Knowing that if I needed to, I could surrender and only lose half of it. But also could really capitalize on opportunities to split and double. So. That's enough of, I'm starting to get flashbacks. That's enough of this blackjack tournament. I'll try again next month. Hopefully next month, I might try to see if I can find a blackjack tournament in Vegas while I'm there. That's why I'm going to Vegas in June. I'll talk more about that on an upcoming episode. And then also hopefully I can get a blackjack tournament and maybe even a baccarat tournament over at MGM National Harbor, before the end of June. All right. Today's interview is with Chris Taylor, a.k.a. Vegas Bun Boy. Most of you probably know him from the Vegas Bun Boy podcast. He joined us from across the pond over in the United Kingdom. And him and I have a really interesting conversation on the disparities between U.S. gambling and U.K. gambling. And not just like odds and games. We really talked about the culture. We really talked about the social perspective of it, the stigma that comes with it, and where the nuances are on each side. Really interesting conversation. I really enjoyed having it, so hopefully you enjoy listening to it. Chris Taylor, a.k.a. Vegas Bun Boy, enjoy. Chris Taylor of the Vegas Bun Boy podcast. Sir, thank you so much for joining us on The Better Life.
You are most welcome. Thanks for having me.
So, like many wonderful people in this community, you were kind enough to reach out and offer your insights and experience as a guest here on the show. And part of living the better life is betting in multiple arenas, multiple areas. I have gambled across the pond before, and it's a little bit different. There's just enough differences in either the games or the behaviors that I think it's worth talking about. Before we get there, though, Chris, let's learn a little bit about you as a gambler. Bring us back to that day where you were first exposed to gambling, where you were like, oh, no, that's interesting.
You know what? It wasn't until I listened to one of your early episodes that I even considered this as actually gambling. My dad used to come home from work on a Friday evening with tickets from a sweepstake that his office had done. So it's a pound in the pot. And if you pick the right minute that the first goal scored in the big game at the weekend, then you win the 90 quid back. And I'd never thought of that as gambling until I listened to, I don't know, maybe it was your show with Chris earlier on this year. I thought, actually, hang on, that was absolutely gambling. There's definitely an element of gambling to that.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I was 10 or 11, I guess, and then the UK got a national lottery in 1994, and it went crazy. The whole country went fucking crazy for this. Obviously, you guys had it for a hell of a long time. We'd never had anything like it, and all of a sudden, everybody was talking about this £1 ticket to win £40 million, whatever it was. So that certainly piqued my interest, and then it just disappeared, and then nothing, no gambling whatsoever, until I was about 16, and then my cousin who lives in Long Island was teaching me how to play Texas Hold'em, because that was when that was all blowing up. So he taught me how to play. I bought a cheap set of chips to bring home with me, taught my friends so we could play casually on weekends. And then when I moved to college, when I was 18, I took it all with me there and taught my friends there how to play. And you know, by this time I wasn't really a novice, so they were all brand new to the game. So I had about, I don't know, 6 months before they caught up to me, where I was making a nice little bit of cash on the side. In my first sort of term or two at uni, saved me having to get a bar job, which was amazing. But then they caught up, and I'm not a great poker player, so I was not excelling past them too quickly, and that was that. That was my 6 months of being an advantage player was over.
Did Black Friday in America affect the poker world on your side of the world? Like, it was, you know, Black Friday, where, you know, PokerStars and Full Tilt stopped offering real money play to United States customers after there was an indictment. It obviously killed poker in America, but both of those sites were still offering online poker to much of the world. Did you guys notice much of a difference in the communities over there?
No, not at all. Yeah. I wasn't particularly embedded in it at the time. I did play a little bit, but there was no difference at all. I mean, there's hardly any restriction on gambling over here, apart from maximums rather.
Yeah.
So there really doesn't seem to be. Something bigger than news recently was there's a lot of, we've got sports books on every street corner over here. And in those sports books, they tend to have some kind of slot machines, maybe some electronic roulette. And they've just this week passed a law that's stopped that's made the electronic roulette maximum £2 bet, because people were just £100, £100, £100. And it was, a lot of, you know, it's very easy for someone, you know, degenerate in nature to wander in off the street with everything that they've got in their pocket and just lose it straight away. That's one negative side of having gambling available everywhere here, is that, you know, a lot of people, you know, get lost in it.
Yeah, I remember. So, my wife and I visited Scotland last year, and I was so pleasantly like being able to walk into a Ladbrokes or a William Hill and just get action down and just walk out. Like, and what's amazing about it is, like, in America, we have this, when we think of sports betting, especially people that have been to Vegas, you imagine, like, this book, right? The sports book, right? With big screens and a big counter, whereas, like, a William Hill shop is smaller than the coffee shop next to it.
Yeah, it's not as plush either as the sports book in Vegas. It's, they're kind of dingy, dirty, bright places, and you know, the clientele that hang around there all day are not your average tourist who is looking to bet on 3 hours worth of horse racing.
That was crazy, and I don't mean to cut you off, but that's what made me, that's the part that I thought was really interesting, was so much of the real estate on the wall and the screens and everything were horses. It wasn't even sports.
Yeah, that's right. Horse racing is big over here. We have a lot going on all the time, pretty much all year round, somewhere or another. And that seems to be where betting culture really kicked off over here, I guess, with regards to sports betting. I'm no expert, but I certainly don't remember people talking too much about, you know, betting on the soccer over here as much as they do now. It certainly was always about the horses. Now, all the adverts we have on TV are geared towards football, soccer. Premier League, international stuff. You can't get away from it at all. I mean, it's massive.
Yeah, I mean, you watch a match right on TV, and all the advertising that lines the field. Some teams even have advertising for books. Yeah,
yeah.
One thing that I thought was really interesting was what I dubbed the vending machine for degenerates. Like Ladbrokes and William Hill. I mean, those were the two that I went into, and there's some other ones over there. But they would have just like a kiosk. You just walk up, you'd find the bet you wanted to make, you'd make your selection, and you would sort of like, almost like ordering a meal, right? Like you would just choose everything you wanted. It would be like, all right, that's 14 pounds or whatever, and you'd make your bet, and you feed them the money like it's a vending machine, and it would just spit out tickets.
Why slow the process down by having human interaction, huh?
Yeah, well, I ended up having to go to what I thought was, and the part of that, Chris, that I thought was really interesting was every bet that book offered was available, getting all the way down to the nuance of prop betting, right? First goal, stuff like that, which I thought was really interesting. I did have to go to the counter and I may have mentioned this story on the show, but I'll say it again. I went to the counter to get a line on U.S. women's soccer, and because I could see on my phone through their website that they had lines, but I couldn't find it in the kiosk. And so she called, I guess maybe the main book or someone. She called someone. She got the lines, and she literally just wrote them down on like a notepad they had there. It was like a sticky note, right? But it was like an official like paper pad of I think it was William Hill. And she just took photocopied it, handed me, I can't remember which, I think I got the photocopy, and just handed me that, and that was my ticket. And I was like, so this will work, huh? She's like, yep, just come back tomorrow if there are winners. And I was like, all right. And like, it almost seemed less legitimate than had I had, you know, a guy on the corner offered me the same line and like texted me like, there's your ticket, right? And sure enough, I came back the next day, I got paid, and I thought that was amazing. Like, that was just how casual that was, and how she just made a phone call, right, handwritten ticket. It was great. You mentioned like getting into poker and stuff like that. We've heard on your podcast that you like playing craps and stuff like that. How did you get into becoming like a table games player?
When I was at college, we were gearing up to celebrate a load of our 21st birthdays. So even though gambling here, you have to be 18, you don't have to be 21. We decided we were going to go down to the local casino, which is a chain casino over here. We have a lot of Grosvenor casinos. They're atmosphereless, bright boxes of fun, I guess, if you want to give it a little bit. We went there for a visit. It was the first time we played any sort of game. So, you know, naturally you move to roulette because there's literally nothing to learn. It's funny, actually, one of your tweets yesterday about not trusting anyone who plays the Martingale system. We read about that in the lead up to it because we were trying to look at what games there are available and how to play them. And we'd read about the Martingale system. So, you know, being total idiots, we started playing that. Dealers called us out immediately about how dumb it was. And still they were not letting back. We made some good money for ourselves at the time, which was obviously just blind luck. But one of our friends kind of ended the fun with a pretty big bump when he carried on going all the way up to about a grand.
Oof.
Which was his whole, you know, to a college kid in 2005, that we would get a student loan every semester of about £1,000 that's meant to, you know, pay for your room and your board and your food and everything for that sort of 3-month period. So he got the whole way up to that, and he had, and this is just for a £10 win, by the way. He was so into it that he went out, he withdrew the cash, he came back to the table, he popped it down on black. Of course, it came up red, and that was that. He just chucked away his entire livelihood for the next 3 months. So that kind of left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. It's probably the dumbest thing I've ever seen anyone do. and as a result, because, you know, I was just thinking, okay, shit, if I start playing like this and I start throwing away all my money, what the fuck is my dad going to say to him when he's funded my college education? And I've come back to him saying, you know what, I need some more money because I really, really enjoyed roulette for 10 minutes. That's not going to work out. So I didn't actually go back to a casino for a pretty long time after that. And it wasn't until we were suggested by some friends to go visit Vegas in 2013 that I started even thinking about it again. And then we got to Vegas and played a little bit of roulette, and I thought, oh, this is no good. This is a terrible game. Started playing blackjack. Very quickly read up on basic strategy in the hotel room in the New York on the first night. Bought one of those cards and had it with me at the table for a bit.
Yeah, good.
Looking like a total noob.
That's fine. A lot of people don't know you're allowed to have those at the table.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And you will feel inferior to everyone who doesn't have one, even if they're playing terribly.
Yep.
I tell you that for free. You'll feel like an absolute moron for having this card.
Let me tell you, there's enough shitty blackjack players at the blackjack table anyways. You might as well be playing the lower house edge with your little card, letting them ridicule you while they're standing on their 16 because they don't want to bust when the dealer has a 7. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Vegas got me back into recreational gambling, really, I suppose, in a pretty big way.
As it does.
Yeah. I don't play that often over here because the atmosphere is generally rubbish. Certainly if you've played and had a good time in Vegas or anywhere in the States, I guess, coming back to the UK where it's all very dour and serious is not the best time. So, yeah, it was going to Vegas that really got me back into that. And then it was listening to Mark and Dr. Mike talk about craps that got me into craps. And there was nothing here. I was playing online for 2 years before I got back to Vegas to play for real. I hadn't even considered, having never seen a craps table, that there would be any here. Turns out there are, which is great. So I've been upping my visits more recently. But yeah, it's definitely those guys I've got to thank for that. So,
let's talk a little bit about the disparity between American gambling and what we'll just call it European gambling.
Sure.
You're right. The mood in the gaming in the casinos are just different, right? Like, and I don't want to make it sound like it's dark and it's like a bit difference between dark and light, because I've definitely been like, especially here in Maryland, like I've been to the Baltimore Horseshoe, and like no one, I went to the craps table, and even like when they were winning, no one really seemed to be having a good time, right? So there's definitely times where America can bear a really bad table to play at. But the handful of times that I've played blackjack in Europe, I guess maybe when I was in Barcelona, there was a little bit more of a lively crowd there. But when I played when I played in Edinburgh, when I played in where else did I play? Lithuania. There's a number of other places. Just there wasn't as much like excitement, right? And it almost seemed like they were there just for the sake of playing, and that there was no like, I don't know. I guess maybe they were like, it's like they knew they already lost, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, right. No, that's exactly how it is. That is as succinctly as I think anyone could put it. Actually, it's as if they knew they already lost. Yeah, spot on.
Yeah. So why do you think gambling then? And you can call upon your friends, yourself, anybody that you've just observed, why do you think gambling is still an industry? Why do you think people still, quote unquote, enjoy or still go? Is it just they're degenerates and they need to scratch that itch? Or do you think they just don't know how to show the appreciation for the activity that they enjoy?
I think a big part of it is a lot of money being thrown over the tables is probably because people can't not throw their money over the tables. Another big part of it is the fact that it's not glamorized and ingrained in culture as much as it is over where you are, I don't think. The glitz and glamour of Vegas is something that we don't have here. I mean, it's all very, I guess, one of a better term, high class. It all looks very, you know, larger than life. It's all astonishing. Whereas over here, it's. I've always thought, you know, you go to a bowling alley in the States, I've always figured that is the kind of atmosphere that casinos are over here. That's what it feels like. There's no extra oomph to it. It always feels like it's a it's a day-to-day thing. They're absolutely everywhere because it's legal everywhere. There's no stigma around the legality of it. So there's never been any, we can't play it, I really want to play it aspect to it, I suppose. I guess a little bit like what you're going to experience over the next year, 18 months with sports betting in local markets. So you might see a little bit of that sort of, I don't know what the word I want to use is here. I've got to have a bit of a mind blank, but it lowers the contrast a bit.
So do you think there's opportunity for, and I guess maybe the question is, and this maybe might be our segue into the next thing I want to talk to you about is, you know, you said I remember you tweeted the other day, you share how excited you were about the Golden Knights and their achievements and stuff. And your the people around you are just like, why are you so obsessed with Vegas? Right.
Yeah,
and I'm curious, you can't be alone, right? In your infatuation with Vegas. We've heard from the people that have been on your podcast. I've met people overseas that love Vegas. Why do you think they haven't developed, not even just a Vegas type thing, but why do you think that type of resort and casino really hasn't found its way into the UK and Europe?
I think again, because there isn't the, well, for a start, we're tiny. We're absolutely tiny. There isn't the long distance between destinations that you've got over there that could result in you having the need to have a hotel as part of a casino resort.
Fair.
Secondly, I think as well, it's because it's been, you know, I mean, I'm 34 now, so I'm only going back 25 years, maybe even less than that. But it's always been there for as long as I can remember. It's always been there and it's always been everywhere. So all major towns and cities will have a casino of some kind around. There's never been any need to bring that all together in any type of cluster. I don't think you find too many places apart from perhaps central London, Birmingham, Manchester, the really big cities where there are lots of casinos that cluster together. There isn't the appetite for it. There would never be the appetite for it. I wouldn't have thought. We're too small, and it's been around and easily accessible for far too long.
One thing I have noticed that, at least from the few times that I've been gambling in Europe, that it does seem like they try to make it seem a little classier. They try to make it seem a little bit more exclusive. They try to make it seem like this is a distinguished event. I remember I went to it's closed now, but this isn't exactly how it's pronounced, but the American in me is just going to call it the Aviation Club of France. It was in Paris. It was on the Champs-Élysées in Paris. Yeah. And it was like it was a parlor, like it was something you would actually call a gambling parlor. I remember I went to the Genting?
You know what? I don't know either. It's either Genting or Genting.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm not going to make a fool of myself by saying I do know.
Right. When I went there in Edinburgh, like it was, you know, and what's interesting about a lot of casinos over there, right, is you have to like check in and become a member before getting in.
Yes.
Right. Whereas casinos in America, you go in, you can just gamble, but if you wanted to go become a member, that's something you would do sort of on your own. Whereas like when I was in Edinburgh, like I needed to become a member before they were going to let me come in and start gambling. Just that the little nuances there and the difference of the culture, I think really are fascinating and different on how the cultures view that experience of a night of gaming.
Yeah, that's a big reason I think why it hasn't branched out to become a little bit more acceptable to do on a recreational level. I think for people like me who control their bankroll, play now and again, have a great deal of fun. Yeah, sometimes lose, sometimes win. It's difficult to, you know, sit in the office and say, oh yeah, I've got a, as someone was calling it, a 401G that I keep separate from all the household income.
Yeah.
So I'm not gambling away money that isn't mine. So, you know, winnings go in there and that's where it stays. I think that's a little bit alien to a lot of people. But the great thing about doing this podcast that I've been doing is that people like me have been coming out of the woodwork and we started talking and we're having a meetup in the July, which is going to be a bit of fun. So hopefully, in our tiny little world, the sort of 10, 15 of us who are going to get together can actually show our spouses, our our partners, our parents, that this isn't something to be worried about.
Yeah.
Because there's huge stigma. So that's the thing, a big part of it is that unless you're going with a big group of people, if you're going to a casino alone, which I've done a couple of times in the last 6 months, and I imagine you do all the time based on listening to your show.
There's
huge stigma to that, huge stigma behind that, huge stigma.
Yeah, I mean, what's amazing, I guess not amazing, but, I think it's so easy, and this is something that I really admire about people like Mark and Dr. Mike, is I went through most of my life being the only gambler in my group, right? Like, that's just not one group, right? That's as I'm shifting from community to community. I was the gambler. There was one stretch of time where probably my best friend at the time, he was a poker player. He enjoyed betting on sports, you know, like we played blackjack together. That was the only time I really had someone who would go with me to the casinos and enjoy sort of that gambling life. But, you know, like the past five times I've watched the Super Bowl, I'm the only one in the room with action, right? Like I'm the only one yelling at Pink to pick up the damn microphone because I have a prop bet saying that she'll hold the microphone. I'm begging for them to show the show Tom Brady's wife on the screen one more time because I need the over.
Amazing.
Yeah,
that's weird actually you should say that, because I'm one of a very small number of people in my own circle that gamble in casinos, but I'm also maybe the only person who doesn't ever bet on sports. I mean, everybody will be and that's another thing actually, there's definitely a stigma. You can go to a casino on your own on a Saturday night and play poker, and people are thinking, well, why aren't you at home with your kids, why aren't you out with your friends, why are you going somewhere alone on a Saturday night? And then you can be buried on the flip side, you can be buried in your phone in one of six different betting apps that you've got, right, putting unknown amounts on however many games without anyone even knowing. I don't know which is worse. So I guess at least my advice is clear and in front of people's eyes, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I think it's one thing, and it'll be interesting to see how America as a whole sort of takes to this as states start legalizing it. I imagine, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about this. I've talked to, you know, my friend Gil Alexander, who's been on the show a couple of times. We've talked about sort of the culture that America will take. I don't think we're ever going to see a UK-type culture where we have small betting shops next to the 7-Elevens, right, in place. And the reason why I think that is because I think, first, we're going to have sports books like we see in Vegas, because that's what Americans are used to. That's how casinos can capitalize on that. And before we get to a culture that is so comfortable and casual about it, where we would have betting shops, I think we're going to see federal legislation get passed that'll federally control it. And I think it'll make it more difficult then. But I don't know, maybe that'll be the gateway for it. But I think it'll be a while before we see a UK type thing where there's just betting shops. But like, I think we live in a culture worldwide, globally, that's buried in their phone, right? And so, sports betting is so passive. I think that's one of the reasons why it kind of gets a pass on some of the judgments, because, you know, you can swing by a sports book, make your bet, and then casually just start like, you ever, I mean, you said you don't bet on sports, but I'm sure maybe you've seen your friends do this. Like, you'll be out in a night and everywhere they go, they're trying to get a shot. They're trying to get a view of the television because they want to see definitely had nights out like that where, like, as we're going from bar to bar, I'm like, hey, can you put the Celtics game on? I know we live in Washington, D.C., and the Wizards are actually playing right now, but could you change the channel to a team no one really wants to watch? I got action. So part of this conversation, and we haven't got there because the difference between the U.S. and Europe are so fascinating to me, but part of this conversation is then the infatuation with Vegas, right? And I'm curious to hear, like, living overseas, at least from our standpoint, living overseas, having, you know, we fantasize about Europe and having all these cities close to each other, and you know, gambling is available, but like you said, it's not as glamorous stuff. So what is it about Vegas that has you just so desperate to get back?
I think it's the escapism. I think it's so very much the opposite of day-to-day life that it's something that maybe you're always pining for. You know, a lot of people like to book or make sure they've got a vacation booked in the next 6 months, so they know that they're slogging away in the office all day long for something. And I think this is that, but it's, you know, dialed up to 10. And I also think it's for me, it's the gaming atmosphere there. That is maybe 80% of it for me. I also love Pretty Lights, so that helps. But but the gaming atmosphere is just so far and away. I mean, I've always been a gambler, I think, at heart. I've never been in love with gaming until I played with like-minded people in a place where I can get a free drink if I want one. And then if I tip nicely enough, another one will come very quickly. And then beyond that, once you're done with that, if you're having a bad time, there's a pool that looks like a beach. Then there's an amazing world-class show you can go see. Now there's, you know, top-class sports in the Golden Knights and soon to be the Raiders. Disneyland for adults has been said a lot. And I think for someone with a short attention span and a love of, you know, childhood whimsy like myself, it's the perfect place to go. So, it's also fucking expensive and can't do it very often. So there's always that as well. So, you know, it kind of builds up in the background.
It is expensive. It's probably still cheaper for me than it is you, but I have been flabbergasted by how much and how difficult it is to get a decently priced direct flight from Washington, D.C. to Las Vegas. I'm like, this, yeah. I know they're both not big cities, but they're both cities visited enough that I feel like there would somehow be a connection between the two, and there'd be a direct flight that, I don't know. Maybe people from Vegas don't care to go to Washington, D.C. Maybe people in D.C. don't care to go to Vegas. But, one thing I miss about living on the West, I lived in California for a year, and man, how easy it is to get a round trip flight for less than $100. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
496 days and some odd hours at the time of recording is what your little ticker on your on your website says. Why is it that far in the future? Are you saving up for it? Is there other life events that's caught? I know you just had a kid.
Yeah. Initially, September was going to be my wife's cousin's 30th birthday. So our first trip in 2013 was with him and his now wife. So we were going to revisit that. But I think they might have pulled out. And my wife and I were discussing going May, Memorial Day weekend next year. So I had a little chat with Tony from 360 Vegas just to confirm that they were planning Vegas Vacation 8 for that weekend, and they are. So I think we're going to aim for that. It's not done yet, but I'm hoping in the next month or so I can knock, I don't know, a good 100 days off that countdown. So that would be good.
Yeah, absolutely. That's I will not be at the at Vegas Vacation. What's this one? Six.
Six.
Nor will I be at Zorkfest, but I am thinking that. I mean, everybody seems so stoked about it. I feel like I have to go to one of these, and so
it does seem fun, and the online side of the community is insanely welcoming, helpful, you know, heartwarming. Sometimes it's good. It's good that everybody gets together and it's so supportive. As you said, I think I got halfway through your post Gamble Palooza show on the way home today. And you were talking about how nice the community was and how it, you know, welcomed you felt just meeting them for the first time. So yeah, it's a good thing. It's a really good thing.
Yeah. And let's see if I can say this without accidentally making somebody upset. there's other parts of the gambling community. I would consider where we are in the gambling community. We're sort of a part of the recreational gambler / Vegas fans part, right? That's the sort of part of the community we are. And then you have poker, and then you have sports betting, and I guess there's some other part. this is definitely the more welcoming of the three like main silos of gambling, right? Recreational gambling, sports betting, and poker. Not to say there aren't welcoming people in those, but there's more competition to be right and to be better.
Yeah,
that some people, yeah, that people become a little bit more standoffish and people a little bit more judgmental. Which is why if I have someone from one of those communities on my podcast, it's because they're not a dick. that's the being good at what they're talking about is one thing. Not being a dick is the actually the biggest criteria.
Yeah, right.
So I mean, let's talk about you're part of this community. You mentioned members of the like Mike and Mark and Dr. Mike helping you, sort of motivating you to get try out craps again and stuff like that. How did you first like get into? I mean, your podcast is only what, 8 episodes in, something like that. I mean, how are you? I know there's a story behind the Vegas Bun Boy. I've briefly heard it from someone. It's a little bit before my time in this community, but. Tell us about your introduction to this community and your inspiration behind contributing to it with a podcast.
I've been listening to podcasts for years now. I think I was planning a trip to Vegas and I thought, I wonder if there's anything podcasty around this. And I found Adam's podcast, Vegas Fanboy. Started listening to that. He mentioned You Can Bet on That. Started listening to them. 500 by Midnight, 360 Vegas, a few others. And so I've been following a lot of them and a lot of what's going on and on Twitter for a long time. And I don't really tweet on my personal account. I've got nothing to say. I just kind of consume information. So it's just to pick up info and see what's going on. And then when Adam quit his Vegas Fanboy run, Chris from Faces and Aces got a very nice message, a compilation together from all the people in the community for him, which he played on his last show. And the message from Mark and Dr. Mike was something along the lines of, who is this Vegas bun boy? I've never heard of him. Why would anyone listen to a podcast about hot dogs? And for some reason, I just thought, oh, I'm going to create that on Twitter with no forethought. No thinking I'm going to set up a podcast about anything. So I set up Vegas Bun Boy Twitter account, rose my head above the parapet, and all of a sudden Chris Kim is barraging my inbox saying, are you going to make a podcast? Are you going to do a podcast about hot dogs? What is this? So his enthusiasm and his encouragement after a couple of weeks of chatting kind of got me into the idea of actually creating a podcast about Vegas from the Brit perspective, because it didn't seem to be anything like that at all. It's not very serious, as you probably gathered from listening to it. It's not very serious, as you probably gathered from the fact that in 8 months I've only put out 8 episodes. But it's a bit of fun. It's a hobby. It's been a nice way of kind of getting my foot in the door with regards to talking to like-minded individuals. So that's about it, really. It's not anything serious. I don't think anyone's going to get any really, really good information about it from it. I'm just trying to make it fun for people to listen to, and you know, plenty of people do listen to it, and I've had some good feedback, so I'm not going to stop just yet. But yeah, it's certainly not doing as much good, let's say, as perhaps Vegas Confessions or You Can Bet on That, or even your show that is full of useful information as well as being entertaining. Mine's just yeah, it's just me fucking about in my living room, really. So
yeah, well, I appreciate that honorable mention there, right behind You Can Bet on That and Vegas Confessions. Eric Rosenthal will give me a hard time about that later, I'm sure. I forgot to go back and do the math because it's been a little while since my last one, but I'm pretty sure it's 4-2 in my, maybe it's 3-2. Man, I need to go back. I know I can do at least one more of these. The bet your life on it question.
Oh yeah.
If I remember right, I'm pretty sure it's either 3-2 or 4-2. Muhammad Ali versus Mike Tyson. Both of them in their prime, if they were to fight and you had to literally bet your life on it, where if you lost, you would die immediately. But if you were to win, you'd be granted an entire second lifetime. Not double your life, because no one wants to be 160 years old. An entire second lifetime. Who are you betting your life on?
It's a tough question. And you know, the answers that people have given already are, you know, valid. I just think if Tyson caught him once, that'd be the end of it. But would Ali let himself get caught? I'd probably have to flip a coin. I'd probably have to flip a coin, and in my mind's eye, I think Tyson's got it. I think Tyson's got it. I just think
Okay.
he's just so powerful, so powerful.
Okay, I believe that is a third vote for Tyson. Wow, this is getting a lot closer than I thought it was going to be. Very well. The Cleveland Browns swept the third party presidential votes 5-0. It'll be interesting to see if this one comes down to. Very well. Chris, I really appreciate your time, man. This was a conversation that I don't know enough pe or what's the right way to say this? You know, I don't have any friends that gamble that are across the pond. And so, it was nice to be able to talk to someone about the differences in cultures, because I think it's really fascinating. And I will be getting a little bit more European gambling experience when I'm in Europe. My mother has something she's going to do with a friend, and I'm taking that like 2-hour window and running to the nearest casino to get a little blackjack in, hopefully. Maybe some Punto Banco, I don't know. But I'm looking forward to that. I'll report back on other nuances that I see. If someone wants to hear Vegas Bun Boy and wants to check out what you're talking about, if they're not already familiar with you, where can they find you? How can they listen to your show?
It's downloadable everywhere. So iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, all the other stuff. You can get at me on Twitter at Vegas Bun Boy, and the website's vegasbunboy.com.
Wonderful. Chris, thank you so much for your time, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks very much for having me on.
So what you just heard was about 75% of the conversation that I had with Chris. Just after we had wrapped up the show, he had pointed out that there was a couple things we hadn't talked about that maybe we should have plugged in there, including comparing odds and other experiences and gambling in Europe. So if you want to hear that portion of the show, it's probably about 15 to 20 minutes long. It is available to all of my patrons on Patreon, patreon.com/thebetterlife. You just got to be a patron. That's it. $1 a month, you get access to the content. I'll probably even throw in the two completely random conversations that Tony Snyder and I had that got taken out of his episode. So patreon.com/thebetterlife. Appreciate all the support. It just goes right back into the show. We're creating more t-shirts. I'm developing the website. Something I hope to do on my long plane ride to Europe tomorrow is work on the websites and finally get that finished. So appreciate everybody's support, and the money goes to just making this show and this experience better. We are on Twitter at The Better Life. If you follow us on Twitter, I say us, like there's more people involved. If you follow me on Twitter, at The Better Life, you've probably seen me retweet. You've probably seen other people tweet about Zorkfest and the event Podcasters After Dark. Podcasters After Dark is sponsored by The Better Life. I recently learned from the Vegas Confessions podcast that the sponsorship money we use to help support Podcasters After Dark is being used to subsidize the cost of drinks. And I couldn't find that a more appropriate use of that money. So I hope everybody enjoys. I have a couple more tickets that I can offer for Podcasters After Dark. Travel Zork told me that they have a couple more tickets that I can make available to people. So I don't know the process in which I'm going to deliver those. So if you think you're going to be in Vegas, or if you know you're going to be in Vegas, I guess you should say no. Like, don't ask for these tickets if you can't be there. If you know you're going to be in Vegas Saturday, May 26th, and you want to go to Podcasters After Dark and you're not already going to Zorkfest, hit me up on Twitter at The Better Life and be like, hey, yo, let me get them tickets. And I guess first come, first serve on those. Last but not least, we do have t-shirts. We have one t-shirt, I should say. TheBetterLife.us/merch. There is a t-shirt that says, one of those idiots who believes in analytics. That is poking fun of Charles Barkley making fun of an NBA owner for believing in analytics, and he makes a comment that he's one of those idiots who believes in analytics. I believe in analytics, and I thought it'd be funny to make that t-shirt, so we did. TheBetterLife.us/merch. That's where you can cop one of those shirts. All right, gonna wrap it up. Next week's episode, not sure what's gonna happen. I had to reschedule a couple of interviews that were gonna be used for that. Or I should say, my interviewees couldn't make it, and so those had to be rescheduled. Let me know if you're on Patreon, if you're on Twitter, hit me up in the way that you know how. Tell me, hey, give us an episode and I'll put together a monologue. Let me know if you have any questions, if you have anything you want me to address, if there's anything you want to hear about blackjack tournament strategy, sports betting, craps, casino life, whatever it may be. You want to hear a story? Let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to pass. I'm going to pass on it. Talk to someone who I respect. We talked and I asked, hey, what do you think I should do for this for this week where I'm not sure if I'll have content? He says, if you're going to do a monologue, it's got to be good. So that's the bar that I'm setting at. So I'm going to record one between now and me leaving for Europe. If I love it, I'll put it out. If I don't, I'm not going to put it out. And you can help make that monologue possibly better by letting me know if there's something you want me to address. So patreon.com/thebetterlife, Twitter @thebetterlife. Let me know if there's anything you want me to address. Until then, good night. Good luck.